said recording. I think we're good to go. Crisp. Awesome. That's what I like to hear.
Like to hear it.
All right. Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. My name is Brandon Hall, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, it's been quite a while, so how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. We were just talking about how life doesn't slow down even on a break, and I think that is a very apt description of the last month, but we're back and we're better than ever, in my opinion. So yeah, it's good to be back.
Yeah. Yeah, same. I, like you, super busy, but hopefully, you know, now that the summer's coming to a close and the holidays are right around the corner, it slows down a little bit. That's usually the slow period for me is the holidays. So it's aside from like family events, but
yeah, no, exactly.
All right. Well, we have a few fun topics to get into today. I thought, what better way to come back from break than to just immediately dive into some hot topics from social media that I found. So, hope you all enjoy that. Definitely not picking the soft topics today. You know, coming back with a bang, I'd say, but before we get into all that, I'm sure, Ash, you've done some reading over the past month, like me, maybe. So what are you currently reading?
I am rereading Lyrael. I can never pronounce it out loud. In my head, it sounds fine. By Garth Nix. It's a part of his Old Kingdom trilogy or series, rather. I just needed a comfort read to get me back into the groove. So that's what I'm reading.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I am reading Dracula. I picked it up actually on vacation. I've never read it before. So
me neither.
I was actually at the bookstore, and I think I saw a previous read of yours. It may have been someone else, but it was A Dowry in Blood or something like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Dracula retelling, if I'm thinking of it correctly, or like from a different perspective. But yeah, I looked at that and I almost grabbed it, but then I was like, wait, I want to read the original first and then I'll get to that. That's what prompted me to pick it up, because I was carrying around like five books at the bookstore, and I was like, I'm not going to buy all five of these.
Yeah, I think I actually just learned recently that Bram Stoker is Irish.
Oh, really?
Which I had no idea. I had to do a double Google, because I was like, is this lying to me? No, apparently someone could correct me, but I'm, from what Google tells me, Bram Stoker is an Irish author. I had no idea.
Very interesting. Yeah, I don't know much about the author himself, so I guess I'll have to do some research. But
nice, good book for the spooky season beginnings.
Right, I didn't even think of that. It lines up perfectly with October. Awesome. Well, we have a few podcast updates for you guys that I'm going to reiterate from our last episode, which was, I think, a little over a month ago now. So just to refresh everyone's memories, our guest form is now live in our link tree. You can find that in my Instagram bio and on all the Quill and Query social media pages, I'm pretty sure, in the bio. Mm-hmm. So if you are looking to join us for an episode, be sure to apply there. We ask a few basic questions just so we can get to know you and see if, you know, it's a good fit. But we would love to have you on the show. So be sure to fill that out if you are a independent author looking to market a new or upcoming release, or maybe an old book. We don't discriminate, but we've also switched our recording schedule. By now, you're probably well aware of this, but just for those who aren't, we are now recording every second and fourth Tuesday, and then whenever Ash and I are busy, that also affects this past month. Try to do every second and fourth Tuesday, but you know, sometimes life happens. So that's our new schedule.
Holidays too, you know, might be some mix-ups coming up. So we'll let everyone know. Don't worry.
we'll make sure we put out some social posts so you guys aren't. I would hope you have something to do on Christmas, but if not, it's totally fine. We will let you know. All right. Well, what else? Oh, and we are now available to watch and listen to on YouTube. This all of the season 2 episodes are live on YouTube. I try to get all of our posts or past recordings up by Friday, so you guys can listen to it over the weekend if you can't make the live show. I think that covers all the podcast updates for this week. And you guys are probably tired of hearing some of those, so I won't repeat them next week. and we have no audience questions this week. And I did forget to put out an indie release spotlight post, so I apologize, but I will gather some. We will ask for indie releases again shortly, and we will just cover the time period that we missed. If anyone had a release while we were gone or this past week, we'll be happy to cover those as well. So, all right. That was a very long-winded update. I'm trying to get back into the groove of like podcast speaking here. No, so
that's okay. We've been gone long enough that a long intro, I think, is warranted after such a multi-week break. So I don't think anyone's going to mind. Hopefully not, at least.
Looks like Nicole has an indie release for us. Resonate by Courtney Powers comes out October 1st. So keep your eyes out for that. And congratulations, Courtney Powers, on your upcoming release.
Huge. Big deal.
All right. Well, moving straight over to our indie publishing and book topics. I tried to pick a few controversial ones today.
I was like, let's go back, hit the ground running.
Yeah. So, well, we're going to work our way up to, I think, the most controversial one that I saw. We got a couple more before it, but the first one I wanted to go or to discuss today kind of falls. It's relevant to the controversial topic that I want to touch on because it's about navigating social media posts as an author or someone in publishing or writing, because I've been seeing a lot more hot takes and negative opinions posted more and more on social media. And so it just got me curious as to like how some of these people vet their own posts, right? Like, how are you deciding that this is something that's okay to post? Like, are you running it by anybody first? And the reason I think about that is because, you know, to me, my author brand is important to me. I'm trying to maintain a positive environment and make sure that, you know, I'm not alienating my potential readers. I'm trying to foster a positive community here. And I think you and I have kind of the same mindset on that. But I do know that you like to wade into hot topics a little more than I do, and you do it very gracefully, which I envy because I don't know that I could do that. But so I was curious, Ash, how do you decide, like, when you're making a TikTok post or an Instagram post or whatever other social media platforms you use, like, do you have any vetting process for when you're posting something that might be controversial, or do you just throw it out there and see how it lands?
Yeah, well, I come from a family deeply rooted in debate culture. It was very common to do at the table, like every dinner that we had together, which was almost daily. So I'm kind of a little bit more comfortable, I think, with like hot takes and defending my opinions. So I feel a little bit more comfortable social media wise in doing so, I think, which in my opinion makes a difference in how you're going to handle some of these like hot button topics in whatever niche genre you're in. So I feel that the way I vet my own posts is that if I'm not willing to go to bat to defend those things, then I'm not going to post it. And I try and stay away from doing anything like personal. I have stitched people before, but if I do, I'm always like, hey, coming at this from a different perspective, not trying to attack or like other somebody else. So as long as I'm like willing to withhold, you know, did your phone fall?
Yeah, we fell over here. Sorry, guys. <It's okay. laughs>
If I'm not like willing to like go live with somebody to debate my point or to interact with those persons, then I'm just not going to post about it. And I've had posts where I've like people have vehemently disagreed with me, but it's like I'm not going to take the post down because I truly believe in those things. And if my mind has changed, then I'm happy to say that. But in the grand scheme of things, I'm okay with being a little controversial, but I'm not going to be rude. I'm not going to be mean. I'm going to always try, at least in my what I think I do, is provide an alternative mindset or an alternative way of thinking about the topic. And then I also just like don't interact with anyone under like 20 at this point. Just like if you have a one in front of your age, I just like try not to sit in front anymore.
Completely understandable.
Yeah. Only because I just feel like in social media you want to just get your voice heard. So I know my opinion doesn't actually matter in the grand scheme of things. I know I'm just kind of shouting to the void half the time, and that's okay. Like, I've created this little niche kind of corner of the internet, And I've been on the internet for so long that I'm just kind of comfortable here, even if only two people see a video. So I think a lot of it is also, I'm kind of rambling, but a lot of, none of this actually matters. Unless it is like a really important topic of like book banning or like, you know, people of color being represented in the publishing industry. Like there are larger topics to discuss, but usually in those topics, there are people much better equipped to handle them than me. Also, I'm going to pause and get my dog chewing on a bone out of the audio real quick. So apologies.
Actually, on that note, if there are any puppy howls in the background, I did just become a new puppy parent. So she's sleeping, but...
Congratulations! That is so cute.
Thank you. She's great. I love her already. Yeah, she's usually pretty quiet, but sometimes she like really wants my attention for some reason. So, you know, whether she's hungry or needs to go outside, but I took care of all of her needs before this, so she should be good.
That's good. That's great. Yeah, so you'll have to tell us more. Everyone is very excited about this. Nicole is, what breed is she? Is she like a mix?
She's a purebred golden retriever. I drove a very long way to go pick her up. And she is the sweetest little puppy. I love her. So cute. Her name is Nova. She's gorgeous. I'll be sure to share some more pics of her on social media. I was trying to get a few like book themed snapshots of her, like like she looks like she's reading or something, you know, to theme it. But yeah.
Love it. But yeah, that's my long winded answer to your question. I know you're a little bit more reserved in terms of interacting with like that kind of stuff, but I don't think you and I ever dip our toes into stuff that's too scandalous.
Right. Yeah. No, I think you do. You do a really good job when you do like broach those hot takes, or what might be considered a hot take. Personally, I don't think anything you've put out there has been super controversial. It's just that like the conversation surrounding it online can wade into controversial territory. But I do think you do a good job of finding like a nice balance when you touch on those topics. I'm just always worried about like either saying something the wrong way or, you know, I don't do well in those internet debate spaces very well. I can do it like in my private life. I don't mind talking about those things. It's just, I haven't really navigated doing it online so much. So I think that's where my hesitation comes, because I also have seen a lot of people put out really bad takes, and that there's always that worry of like, am I gonna do that?
Seriously, I think that's like a really good, like what you're saying is like, if I am having to retake and like re-record the same video over and over again because I can't quite articulate my point, then the video doesn't ever get made. You know what I mean? Because it's just like, yeah, maybe some things just aren't meant to be discussed with the masses, and I think that's okay. And I think privacy is its own thing too. It's like, you don't want everyone to know all of your opinions.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, not in my opinion, it's not necessary. Oh my god, she has the bone again. I just texted my boyfriend to come get the bone from her.
It's all good. It's all good. We should invite the dogs on as co-hosts one day.
Yeah, it's just like, I'm gonna make this intro back into podcasting really challenging for you.
No worries. But yeah, so I kind of blended our two topics here. So I'm going to kind of pick up the pieces that we didn't touch on, but on like the flip side of navigating social media posting as an author, I know a lot of people stress about like the frequency of posting content. I used to do this, early on when I joined BookTok. It's pretty much what got me from 0 to 1,000, like really fast, was posting 3 to 4 times a day. For those of you who follow me, I have not done that in a long time, just because I can't think of stuff to post anymore that frequently. And so, yeah, I don't currently have a schedule. I have drafts of posts that I would like to make, and some of them are kind of scheduled around certain times. Like for Blades for Hire, I have a bunch of like draft posts for that, but they're obviously not going to get posted now, because now it's not a good time. It should line up with,
we're still pretty early
with the release of that and whatnot. So outside of that, I have a bunch of other drafts that are kind of just like random to fill in my gaps of posting. And I'll, as far as like design and editing tools, I wanted to touch on those as well. One that I use for social media is pretty much it's like the exclusive tool that I use is Canva, because it's very, very mobile friendly, and it's very easy to create social media posts on there. And I know me as a, like, someone who's a designer for their day job, that's probably sacrilege to say, but I don't want to get open up Photoshop for my social media posts. I just want to quick grab a template in Canva and throw it up on Instagram. So I spend eight hours a day designing in other programs. I don't need to do that for everything else.
No, you're so right though. Yeah.
But what about you, Ash? Do you have like a schedule, or do you have like, how do you approach your drafts and your posts and how you edit and stuff like that? Are you just kind of take it as it comes, like I'm kind of doing now?
Yeah, so I actually really admire you and your style of posting, because it's like very consistent and clean and coordinated. And I am the complete opposite of this. I have, first of all, I've taken a bit of a social media break, at least on TikTok, of making videos. I just wasn't feeling it anymore. And I'm working on my own addiction to social media. So it's been really, this past month has been a bit of a challenge, like mentally and like socially, in terms of that kind of space. So I have like zero plan when it comes to social media. It's never been my forte. It's never been something, while I consume a lot of it, I don't really put a lot back in it, if that makes sense. So yeah, I'm not good at advertising myself. It's also hard when you like, I've noticed you get more interactions when you are discussing a hot button topic that everyone else is talking about, and then you gain a bunch of followers, and then you're like, great, awesome, this is sick, now I can start talking about my own stuff, and then you get like no traction.
Yeah.
So playing the game, it can be done, but as someone who's not a huge fan of board games anyway, I'm not really a big like strategy person.
Yeah.
So the answer to your question is I don't have anything. I don't have any. However, I do use Canva Pro. I have like the paid version for it. Mm-hmm. And then for videos, I use CapCut. I find it a little bit more user-friendly than the actual like TikTok editing stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think there's any harm in using Canva. I know like marketing girlies are like, oh my God, Canva. But that's usually because they're trained in better tools, such as like Photoshop and things like that. For the generic, like, and I'm calling us generic, you know, marketing people who just want to try and get their story out or any type of content out, and they're just not a pro, I think Canva and some other tools are perfectly fine. Especially if you do pay for the pro, I find like there's a lot more variation, so you don't keep recycling the same kind of, you know, themes. But yeah, I find it user-friendly, and I really enjoy it when I end up using it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think most of the kind of mockery around Canva, it comes from when, at least as someone who works in like product design, it comes from when someone's trying to use it in like a very serious professional setting.
Right.
And it for things that it's not meant for. Like it's great for social media, but if I'm designing a website for work and someone sends me a Canva file, I'd be a little annoyed because it's not made for that. So that, I just want to say, like, if you feel bad for using Canva, you shouldn't, because it's made for you to use it, like, especially for social media. There's just certain applications in like the professional world that we kind of laugh at if you're using Canva for it. But
definitely.
But yeah, it's a great tool, and I will probably use it forever for my social media.
I find it to be very great. I really like using it. Yeah,
it's awesome. Well, to kind of segue from one of your points on touching on hot button topics, I wanted to talk a little bit about like the importance of positivity in your social media or author brand. I just touched on a little bit of how that's really important to me to foster a healthy, positive community. And it can be difficult when with social media, it feels like you're rewarded for sometimes saying something that's engagement bait or controversial. Just to get, you know, clicks and likes and comments disagreeing with you, even just because it increases, you know, the algorithm will spit it out to more people because it sees more people are engaging with it.
Right.
So, and you touched on a little bit of how you're trying to work on like how much time you spend on social media. So I wonder if this factors into it, like the negativity that you can see. How do you avoid like falling into that trap of becoming, I see a lot of authors do it where
yeah,
you know, they fall into the trap of just engagement bait because it's what gets clicks. So how do you kind of avoid that trap?
Yeah, it is a very, very easy trap to fall into. And I am more prone to that than I think many people realize or want to admit. I found an app called Refocus that I've instigated on my phone to like block certain apps. Like Tuesdays are the only days that after 5 p.m. my TikTok is able to be accessed. Only because I found myself doom scrolling. I found myself starting to compare myself a lot to other people and their journeys, which is just the worst thing to do, especially if you are like me, who is anxiety and depression prone clinically.
Yeah.
And the book drama got so crazy. I just really couldn't stand the back and forth and the so many people stitching like 4 or 5 videos that other people had then stitched. And it just became, it's kind of like a cesspool of negativity. Granted, right. Some of it is definitely like your own algorithm. Like, what are you interacting with? What are you? But yeah, I found it a little depressing. So I kind of had to take a step back. And I'm still struggling a bit with like, my hand immediately goes to my phone when I'm bored. But that's why I picked up Garth Nick's book, because I hadn't read it in a while, but it was familiar enough that I could just fly through it and get my eyes on paper and not on a screen. But in terms of the negativity on BookTok, it, I think, has gotten a lot worse in the last year. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just cancel culture in general or the inexperience with good discourse and good debate, going back to the, you know, me being like a debate person.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people go right to direct attacks and then the bandwagon kind of floods in. And for some people, obviously, it might be necessary, right? Like, hey, you've said this horrible racist or sexist thing, or you've written a book that is extremely insensitive. You know, let's definitely, as a community, come to you saying this isn't right. But I think the nuance of those conversations get lost, because rather than having them face to face or like in conversation and dialogue with one-on-one, it's now to the masses. It's like everyone come to the stage and let's see how many people can engage, and that can get really overwhelming and then lose the plot of the whole reason for engaging with someone.
Yeah.
So I kind of took a step back from BookTok for sure for that exact reason. Because, yeah, it's just an easy thing to fall into. I am so prone to it. So it just had to be like a moment of self-reflection of, hey, like, if my immediate thought to a video was to then respond with my own video, I'm like, I've lost the plot. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to be here. So how do you feel about it? I'm sure you feel kind of similarly in some regard.
Yeah, so I, especially like this past year, I have not had the desire to engage as much on social media, just even in using it. I think because of kind of similar reasons where like it feels like I'm seeing more negativity and just not a lot of refreshing content I hate to sound like snobby here, but stimulating content either. It's mm-hmm. it kind of feels like a waste of time. Like if I've scrolled on TikTok for an hour and then I look at the clock and I'm like, what have I been doing with the past hour? Yeah. Like nothing came of that. Now I do allow myself to kind of engage on BookTok with like the mutuals and occasionally some videos outside of that. But like you, I definitely have cut back mm-hmm. Pretty significantly on not just TikTok, but all social media really. And I think one of the tips you just mentioned where like you went back to something familiar, a book mm-hmm. that you like, I think that's really important, because that has helped me in the past, like to break the urge to just pick up my phone. Is sometimes like I have a whole list of new books I want to read, but it's sometimes it can be hard for me to dive into those right away, especially if I've had like a long day at work and I just kind of want to unwind a little bit and relax. Sometimes it's just a lot easier to pick up something familiar and I can mm-hmm. kind of stick with that, as opposed to trying to immerse myself into something new. So if you are struggling with like social media addiction, try going to something familiar that mm-hmm. might help you, especially if you're like ADHD like me. It really helps.
I didn't even realize that might have been a good tip, but you're exactly right. It's just Yeah, it's been a while since I've read that book, but I remember it enough that it's not going to be anything shocking or hard on my brain. And
yeah,
I think also, not to interject and interrupt you, but a lot of people kind of crap on Kindle Unlimited for the poor quality selection that can be on there. But in the same vein of a familiar book, rereading it, a very easy to read, like, romanticy that is just easy and simple and cute and cozy or whatever can also just be really helpful, especially for someone who reads digitally. You're still staring at a screen, but you're not having to, you know, exhaust an already exhausted brain. So yeah, just wanted to add that point onto you.
Yeah, no, those are all good points. I had a train of thought that I was trying to follow.
Sorry, I know I interrupted you. I'm so sorry.
No, it's all good. I was like at the tail end of it. I think it was just finishing up like that advice. Like if you're ADHD like me, just try something familiar. That's going to be like slightly more maybe intellectually stimulating, but not too overwhelming. For me, that's usually either rereading a good book that I've liked, rewatching a movie even, or replaying an old game while I listen to like a podcast or something that I enjoy. Yeah. Like all of those things I find way more fulfilling. Not that like, obviously as up and coming authors, we have to kind of maintain somewhat of a social media presence. So that also, I feel like that also kind of conflicts sometimes, right? Like you want to stay relevant to some degree, but you don't want to, you know, let it consume you, especially me. Like right now I don't have a release date for my debut novel. So I try not to be too present on social media just because I feel like there might be some fatigue from people who are like, yeah. Oh, when's your book coming out? And like, I'm like, I don't know. eventually. So that's another thing I try to consider too, is when I really want to dive back into everything, I'm like, I'm going to hold off. I'm going to maybe I'll create some of these posts, but I'll save them for another day.
Right. And I think that's such a good point too. It's like the fatigue of sharing something that is in a work in progress can be exhausting for both the creator, the writer, and the people who, you know, watch you or listen. I always like to remember the fact that all of my favorite authors ended up being successful before social media. Yeah. And most authors that I really admire now are very rarely on their own social media. So I think that's always a good thing. TikTok can be a little smoke and mirrors in that regard, because so many current big indie authors get big because of TikTok and their engagement. But in terms of just like how it's been done in the past, it can be good, but also can be really bad. I know some people who like take one day a week and film all of their content for the next month, you know, or like at least the next week and a half, 2 weeks. And while admirable, and I think it definitely helps, especially if you are very specifically a self-published author, is necessary in this kind of social media heavy world. I have been caught up in the fact that I'm making content about writing rather than actually sitting down reading. So you kind of get lost a little bit in the goal and you have to come back and recenter, because it's like, you might be advertising, but is that book written yet? No?
Yeah.
Okay. We need to write. So yeah,
completely agree. I like to try and make my content meaningful. I don't like to repeat posts. And not saying there's anything wrong with people who do that. Like, I know that's just a very different marketing approach than what I want to do. Like, I know people who they'll make a TikTok and then they'll post it on Reels and then they'll post it on YouTube Shorts. For me, I'm very picky about each social media platform is going to have like tailored content. So my TikTok stuff is going to stay. It's going to be TikTok. My Instagram posts aren't going to be copied paste from TikTok. And my YouTube videos aren't going to be pulled over from either or. Right. So, and that's just my personal preference. Like, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with those other approaches, but it also makes my life harder because I can't like triple dip like some people are able to. But I'm just, I don't know. That's the kind of brand that I want. Like I want, if someone goes to my Instagram, I want them to find different content than they found on my TikTok, at least to some degree. Not saying it's all going to be completely like different, but just some variation there.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Good to know about you too. I didn't know that.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on to the hot topic of the day, or one of them.
What do you mean? This wasn't the hot topic?
Well, that was definitely one of them. But I think this is probably the spiciest one that I found. Maybe I haven't gone back down on the dock, so I might be forgetting one. But this was a heated debate on Threads. I don't know how often you use that, but I find myself using it more and more, unfortunately. because it is very prone to engagement bait. And mm-hmm. I think this may be an example, so I may be taking the bait here, but we're going to do it anyway. So the raging debate on Threads as of late that I've seen is whether or not self-publishing counts as publishing.
Right.
And there's a lot of different like takes that I've seen. Some are like, it counts as publishing, but can you call yourself a published author if you're self-published? As opposed to trad published, mm-hmm. are you an author? There's some that are like, are you even an author at all if you're self-published? And I think obviously, since you know we host Quill Inquiry, I think most people are going to know our general opinions on this. But I did want to kind of dive into the more nuanced parts of it, as opposed to like looking at it from a black and white perspective, because I think mm-hmm. that's kind of short-sighted. But just to get your overall opinions first, what are your thoughts on this whole debate? And then we'll dive into like the finer points of discussion
here. Sure. So as mentioned, I've said it multiple times this episode, I am a debate girly. I enjoy a good debate. So when I saw your question on the sheet, I immediately went to Google and I typed in the definition of what publish means. And I will give two, because there are obviously many. So let's be fair there. So the definition, according to the Oxford Dictionary, is of a book, journal, piece of music, etc., prepared and issued for public sale or readership. Another definition is of information printed or made available online so as to be generally known. So if we're using those definitions, which is that's my general definition, obviously not as eloquently put as Oxford, but that's, in my mind, what the word published means. So to me, if you are self-published, doing so without the backing of a official big publisher, then you're still published. It's online for purchase, to read. I think technically even fan fiction, based off of those definitions, can potentially be also something that is published fan fiction. So I'm not really sure. You'll have to give me more background on why people disagree that self-published books is not a published concept. You know what I mean? Like, I don't quite understand what the argument is, or like where the argument is coming from, because I think, yeah, if you put something online to be read, whether it be for free or for sale,
yeah,
it is supposed to be read, and it is public.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with your position. Like, those are my definitions of publish, like the, mm-hmm. according to the Oxford Dictionary. So, you know, pretty reliable source there. That's just kind of the metric I use. Like, now you can throw an adjective in front of that and say self-published or traditionally published, and then can't say you're trad published if you're not. But I don't mm-hmm. really see people doing that. So that's an interesting point to consider. To play devil's advocate, some of this is coming from smaller presses that are looking for authors to publish. So I think there may be some mm-hmm. deceptive practices going on there. Like, you're not published until we sign you.
I see.
That might be. Yeah. Or you're not really a published author, but I can make you one. So, you know, things like that.
Sure.
So I think that's where some of it's coming from. But I think the general like foundation of the argument comes down to, and I'm not saying this to disparage anyone who's self-published, because I am like heavily leaning towards self-publishing initially. Mm-hmm. So I have no issues with self-publishing whatsoever. But just to play devil's advocate here and explain where I think this perspective is coming from, it's that generally speaking, not always, not in every case, but there is a much lower barrier to entry for self-publishing. Mm-hmm. And so with that comes a lack of quality control. Mm-hmm. And so, again, that's not saying all self-published books are bad by any means, but there is not the level of quality control that you're going to find in a traditional publisher. And that's not saying that every traditionally published book is amazing either, because I don't think that by any means. But I think that's where the argument comes from, is that, well, anyone can self-publish for free if they just make a bad cover and then don't edit their book and then they throw it up on KDP. Those books exist? Yes. But are they still technically published? Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not really, I don't think published should be used as an indicator of quality. Because it's more so of like a fact of the product. Like, is this available publicly for reading? If it is, it's published. I think that's where it's coming from, is that some people are using published as kind of a quality indicator. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's what the word is intended for anymore. Like, maybe at a certain point, but like, I don't agree with the argument. I'm just trying to share where I think it's coming from.
Totally. It's interesting because I think that, like, so I've had this debate with my father, actually. And up until recently, under a pseudonym, I have a spider on my desk. One moment. Get out of here. I don't want you. Up until recently, I wasn't, but it's under a pseudonym, so technically no one can figure out I didn't want them to. But there is a definite difference between a writer and an author. And I wonder if that's actually the crux of the argument that people are missing.
Yeah.
I feel like you can be a writer, but if you're not published, then technically you're not an author for some. Because an author can be, again, there are multiple definitions of that as well. You have authored something. But for some people, if you've authored something and it hasn't gone to be published, whether it be traditional or self, then technically you can't call yourself an author.
Yeah.
I struggle with this a little bit, only because I don't necessarily think that can be the case. I think you can author many things, but I do think there is like a publishing component to the definition of an author. So. Yeah. Maybe that's actually what people should be talking about, you know, like this nuance between, oh, I'm a writer, which I consider myself to be, but until it goes up to be published to the public, maybe technically you don't fall under the definition of an author.
Yeah.
I'm not quite, even with your playing devil's advocate, I just don't quite understand the whole argument as to the published and if you're self-published, maybe the quality control is really the issue, which is understandable. Yeah. I mean, not everyone can pay an editor, and so it doesn't go through the editing process that we're used to in some trad publishers. But it seems a little disingenuous of an argument. It seems more to be of like we're trying to keep the others out while us professionals like
gatekeeping.
Gatekeeping a little bit. So we don't like that. We don't like that around here.
Yeah. Yeah, not a fan of that. I want to touch on that because that is actually a topic I did want to explore. So this is the perfect time to do it. The writer versus author debate. And I want to preface this all by saying I know my social tags say Brandon Hall author. The reason for that is because I didn't know if these platforms let you change your name. And so I was like, I don't want to have to make a new account when I'm published. So I'm just going to say author because I don't want to make Brandon Hall writer and then tell everybody, okay, now 2 years later, go follow this new account. That is literally the only reason I call myself an author on here, is because I was one, unsure, and also two, partially lazy, even if that was the case. So I consider myself a writer until I am published. I want to make that clear. Despite what my social handles say, I'm not claiming to be a published author. There was uncertainty there, and I didn't feel like making a bunch of accounts that I couldn't keep track of.
Oh, no, so, totally. Shall I give the official Oxford definition of author as a noun?
Let's hear the facts, Ash.
Because now they can be synonymous, in my opinion, with these definitions I'm reading. So, as a noun, it is a writer of a book, article, or report. Another definition is someone who writes books as a profession, the writings of a professional author, an originator or creator of something, especially a plan or idea. So writer and author seem to be very interchangeable. And in those definitions, nothing specifically about publishing. So technically you and I are authors, even with those definitions. But I think maybe like culturally, or at least like professionally, some people have like a very hard, clear distinction of like, well, you're not published and therefore you're not an author, which an argument could be made for that.
Yeah. I think that's a more, or a less disingenuous argument than like the does self-publishing count thing. Like you said, I like that is an angle I can understand a little more, like that there could be a distinction there, as opposed to the self-published not counting. I just, I don't agree with that at all.
It's so silly. It's mean, it's rude. I don't like it.
Yeah. All right. Well, one last topic for self-publishing, Ash. This is something that some of our fellow anthology authors have chosen to do for their own writing. And it's something I'm also considering. And I wanted to know if you've, because I think the last we talked about your debut novel, you wanted to go trad or at least try to first, but I may be recalling incorrectly. So feel free to correct me. But if you were to self-publish something, how would, have you ever given any thought to creating an LLC? And I know a lot of authors do this to limit litigation around things like defamation and stuff like that, because with an LLC you have, you know, less liability. So some people choose to make like a kind of like a shell LLC just to publish their book under, just to give themselves some protection so they don't lose all their money in the future. Even though it's a very unlikely scenario, it gives some people peace of mind. And so what are your thoughts on this practice, if you have any, and is it something you would, you think you would ever do if you self-published, or how do you feel about it?
Yeah, so actually the advice that I've been given by many people has been to create an LLC, not just for protecting yourself but also for tax purposes. Taxes can be confusing. I don't understand them hardly at all, but I do know, being close with people who are self-employed, especially for those who go on to make their self-publishing their career, it is, at least I've been told, extremely important. And even if I do trad publish, I think making an LLC is just like still important to protect yourself under all of that. So I don't think it's wrong to do. I think it's probably the safest bet. It's easy to do in the United States, at least. And unless you're raking in a bunch of dough, there's really, you know, you don't really need to worry too much about it. But I think it's probably just the safest bet. And it's the general advice that I have heard. So I'm all for it. Protect yourself as much as possible from, nowadays, you never know. You just never know who's going to wish you the worst. And so, so put all the armor on that you can.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, I personally think it's, you know, better safe than sorry is my mindset with these things. So if I do go the self-publishing route, I'm probably going to adopt this advice, just because it seems to be the general, what's the word I'm looking for? Like you said, just the general consensus, advice. The general consensus on what to do here. So and I do have like ideas of how you could expand it into like a legitimate company at some point if it was ever successful. So I think that's also something important to consider, is that like there's growth opportunity there that you can take advantage of. And like you said, creating an LLC in the United States, at least, I don't know about other countries, is a pretty straightforward and
simple,
affordable process. So
it's like if we were ever to get sponsored for the podcast, we would have to make an LLC, you know, just to like cover all those things. Luckily for now, we don't have to worry about it. But yeah, I think it's just smart. Just stay smart, folks.
Well, that covers all of our publishing topics. Ash, we touched on some hot topics. Now we're going to move over to our to the writing segment of the podcast. Before we do that, we have our work in progress check-in. I seem to have concentrated all of my productivity over the past month, so I want to be happy about that, but I'm also afraid that it's going to drop significantly. So we will see. But I think it was because I looked at the calendar and I was like, the deadline that's self-imposed is coming up here. So I gotta make some progress. Just we're going to do our weekly work in progress check-in. I say weekly. It's not weekly anymore. But you
bi-weekly.
Know what I mean? Bi-weekly. Yeah. Bi-weekly, sometimes monthly. You know how it is. So, how's your writing going?
Ooh. Cool. Anyway, no. So I've definitely struggled this year. It's been a really rough year in terms of just like consistency and self-imposed BS on myself. So it's been definitely a work in progress. I actually had a really good therapy session with my therapist, and we came to a conclusion that perhaps my previously considered plotzer pantser, like my mix between being a planner and a plotter, isn't working out for me. And in fact, I need to be a hyper planner. And when I say that, it means that I get a little paralyzed when I sit down to write with I have my generic outline. I've got like what the plot points need to be hit. And then I've got kind of creative freedom. But because I have too much creative freedom in my plot line, in my outline, I sit there unsure of what to write, and that holds me back. Nicole says we froze.
Oh, Nicole, can you see us now? I'm moving, so.
I'm clear on my end for both of us, so it might just be TikTok.
Yeah, everything.
But,
okay, cool.
Okay, great. So anyway, that happened a couple of weeks ago before my big trip on vacation. So I'm working on being a plotter now, which completely changes, honestly. It seems so subtle and so insignificant, but it really changes how you think about your work. And
yeah,
that itself brings in its whole other whatever. This is a very long-winded reply to share with you that I got a couple thousand words down, which is great.
Awesome.
I have a lot left to go. So this week is grind time, and I tend to do better under pressure, which is usually my, and another thing Paula, my therapist, shout out to Paula, said was like, stop trying to make yourself work like other people and just work how you need to work.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, procrastination is my go-to. So we'll see at the end of the week if I can hit my goal. But I'll get these 10,000 words.
Awesome. Well, it's interesting you say that, because I've also been experimenting with both like planning more and then planning a lot less and seeing how that affects. Because like you, I've kind of had a very slow writing year. And I've also noticed, like this past month, obviously, as shared here, I wrote about 5,000 words in mostly all in my Blades for Hire story.
That's great.
So the pressure is definitely contributing to that. And I hate that I work well under pressure like that. But sometimes when it comes to creative work, like I just really need that like very short deadline to get me working.
In the same way?
It's the same way in my day job too, because I have a creative day job, and it's like I can have a month for a project, and sometimes most of the time most of the work is done in that last week, and it's just because that the pressure of knowing I need to show it to the boss is like very motivating. So
I cleared my calendar for this weekend. I was like, I'm not doing anything. I mean, I can like, as long as I've gotten enough done, sure, we can hang out, but I've literally told everybody, I'm like, you're not gonna see me this weekend because this is it. But it feels good though, because I'm like, maybe that's just the person I need. So anyway, I might be with you in that regard.
Yeah. Well, I think I said, I wrote 5,000 words in Blades for Hire. Now, some of that is rewriting, so I don't think my total word count is at 5,000. It's interesting because I was initially going to write a prequel for my debut novel, and I was just having a lot of difficulty bringing it together into what I wanted it to be. And so I scrapped that and I went with something totally different, totally unconnected to any project. So it was interesting. I wrote 1,000 words of like three different stories and I picked one to go with.
Nice.
So, and there
How's that been? Has it been working well for you in that regard? Like just kind
of I actually
freeing yourself
really,
from the plan?
Yeah, I actually really enjoy kind of this disconnected story that I'm working on, because it feels strangely more liberating knowing that I'm not going to need to consider it in my debut, which is, I think that was contributing to some of the stress and the lack of writing progress was that I wasn't just writing a short story. I was writing a prequel to my debut novel. So I needed to make sure everything was like, everything had to be perfect for me there. And I just, I think that added a lot of extra unnecessary pressure. It's still a story I would like to tell one day, but I want to give myself a little more time to work with it and maybe publish it after the debut. So we'll see how that
goes. We love it. Changing and adapting is really hard. I think that's like my biggest lesson, at least this latter half of the year, is you get so stuck, especially, you know, at our ages, like late 20s, early 30s, you're just kind of like, oh, this is how I've always done it. And therefore, you know, this is how it's done. But then you realize you just, at least for me, become really stagnant. Like, you know, I was told, like, don't write at your house. Go somewhere else and write. Like, go to a coffee shop, change your perspective. And for me, I created this, like, writing nook so that I could write here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe a different perspective is what you need. Changing your story to something else is just, like, it makes you uncomfortable at first, but then it ends up being the right decision. So,
Yeah, definitely agree. Just sometimes I think that I've got myself figured out, and then I'm learning new things always. So. Yeah,
which is kind of fun. That's like the whole point of living is just change and adapting to change. And I think I saw, I think she's your mutual too, but her name is Ruby. She's an author. She's working on her book here on TikTok. And she posted a really good video that I reposted, and it was like, I want to let you know that your book writing can take as long as it needs. I'm on 1 year of edits after 2 years of writing, and I'm still not finished. But sometimes that's okay. Anyway, really good positivity about taking your time, taking the time that it needs, trying not to force it. And so that's something I'm trying to put in my own thought process.
Right. Yeah. I think especially in like the indie publishing and the book talk space, comparison can kind of be the thief of joy there, because you see how fast and how many books some people are putting out. I always try not to look in the indie space and look towards the traditionally published space, just because the timelines there line up more with what I have in mind, and so it gives me a little bit more peace of mind to know
That
like some of my favorite authors have, Joe Abercrombie, for example, the First Law trilogy, and I may be wrong, I don't want to speak for him or anything, obviously, but he published three books across 3 years, and then it looks like he just disappeared for like almost 10 years and didn't publish anything, and then came back with new material. So it was like, so it's not uncommon to take a very long time to write a story, by any means. And I think anyone who has heard me talk about my favorite author knows I'm no stranger to that. But
I think it took, and I'm probably fudging the years, and I'm sure someone who's much more knowledgeable than me will correct me, but I think from my recollection, it took Tolkien 12 years to write Lord of the Rings, and then like five more to get it published or something like that. Like, it spanned years and years and years. So that's always humbling too, to be like, nope, even the best and greatest just needed to take their time.
Well, we touched a little bit on this, so we can kind of just touch again on it briefly here. This is a topic we've discussed a little bit in the past, but I wanted to talk about it a little more now that we've had more time with our anthology stories. I touched a little bit on my process and how I've changed my story. But, you know, we're both writers who are working on a debut novel and a short story. So I think we have some unique experiences when it comes to like writing one versus the other. And I just wanted to know, are there any new insights you're seeing, like between how you write a short story versus how you write a novel, and like the pros and cons, or what's easier and harder in one versus the other? Any new insights there?
Well, such great questions today. there's like a very stark difference in my mind, short story versus like a long form novel. I think the most obvious, but the kind that I didn't really realize was going to be the biggest issue for me, was the speed at which things need to occur. Yeah. At least with a novel, you have time to expound upon ideas and the world and the world building and the people that you're following. But with a short story, at least to do a short story well, requires a lot more nuance and a lot more like puzzle piecing together, right? Like, you can't wax poetic for too long about something, or else you've wasted half your short story word count on describing the history. Whatever. So that's what I've struggled most with. It's also the moral of the story, or the premise of the story. I feel like with my novel, I can take the time building it up, and it's going to shift and change as these characters shift and change, even though it has like kind of a generic concept. But with a short story, at least the story I want to tell, I want there to be some takeaway that people can be like, ah, I understand the point of this. Even if it's not a point you agree with, but I want there to be some sort of moral of the story.
Yeah.
And getting that across concisely and consistently is why I'm doing like a longer short story, because I don't have the skill set to do it super short with what I want to say. So yeah, I think you have to condense it down, but do it in a way that doesn't read too fast or too slow or too convoluted. And that is, I'm out of my depth when it comes to this. Hopefully it turns out well. But if not, mistakes are going to get made, and this is a lesson learned, and I'm trying to be like okay with that if it's not received well.
Yeah.
I also had to be like, with the short story, you're a storyteller. You don't have to be any type of anything. You don't have to be like just like focusing on storytelling. So even if people don't quite get the moral of the story, hopefully the story is fun and entertaining enough that they enjoy it, even if they don't take anything away from it. But the content is just very different. So you feel the same way? Maybe not.
Totally.
How are you experiencing the changes between both?
Yeah, so it's interesting because they're two, they're both writing, but it feels like two totally different tasks. Like you have to approach them very differently. I've had to change my whole approach to the short story like several times. And some of the things I struggle with are like what you said, you have a lot less time to get your point across and to tell the story. So even if I'm writing on the longer side of the word counts that we've kind of defined for the anthology, still very limited compared to a novel. And so some things that can be challenging there for me are like world building, because I can't establish this sprawling setting over several chapters, tens of thousands of words. It kind of needs to take shape very early on. And I can't like be throwing in world building exposition and like the conclusion of the story, because that starts to feel weird because the story's just wrapping up and then you're learning more about the world. So it's like it's a weird like difference between the two, is that you have a lot less time to establish like character and world building and setting and all of those things. And so that's the biggest challenge I have, is creating like a memorable setting and interesting characters in a much shorter time frame. That is the main challenge that I keep running into. And initially it led to like a lot of paralysis before, where I just
me too.
Right. But I, like you and I have both said, the pressure of just, well, it's now or never. So
now or never.
And I kind of have the mindset of like, I can either put it out there and receive criticism and learn from that and use that to make my writing better, or I can just never finish it and never put it out there. And I'm not going to be very happy with myself, I feel like, if I take that route. So, just the act of sharing a story and publishing is, a huge step, I think, for a lot of writers. Like taking that first step is important, and you're gonna you're probably going to get a lot of criticism either way with your first few works, and so I'm just trying to kind of remember that as I go into this and get ready to pick up marketing for Blades for Hire and everything, is that like this doesn't need to be my magnum opus or whatever. Like, it's just a short story, it's my first published work. And not to say that I'm not trying to make something good, but just perfection can be the enemy of productivity in that regard.
No, I'm so glad you're feeling the same way, because for we don't really chat in the Discord with everyone else, so I'm interested to hear their experience. And I think a part of the marketing is us getting together and kind of chatting, but you're 100% right. There was so much paralysis, and still is to an extent, but it's more of like, there were a couple moments even recently within the past week where I'm like, maybe I should just tell Brandon that this isn't the right time. I'm not very confident in the story overall. Like, maybe I've bitten off more than I can chew. And then I'm like, but is the disappointment in not doing that going to be worse than any type of negative feedback I receive? And I realized that, myself, I would be so disappointed in myself. Mm-hmm. Even if I put out something that no one likes, at least it's out there. And the feedback I receive, like you said, will be so beneficial to future projects and the novel and anything else that I do in the future. And also, it's just good to have your work already out there by the time you're trying to, you know, sell your own novel. So yeah, lots of doubts, which I don't think people really talk about very often when it comes to things like this. It's like, you just sit there and you're like, what? Is this the right move? And then it's like, well, I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't. But, you know, one outweighs the other. So yeah, you just kind of have to go for it and hope for the best. And if not, take it. Yeah, just as like punches on the chin and learn from it and move forward.
Yeah. Well, I love that you mentioned, you know, that kind of self-doubt of, should I just tell, you know, Brandon or the group that I need to drop out? Because you're not the only person who has brought that to my attention. Like, I've had multiple people in the anthology group say, like, either I don't know if I can meet the deadline, or I'm just not very confident in my story. And so I want everyone to know, like, if you really need to drop out, there's no hard feelings there.
Sure.
But I am, of course. But I'm also going to do my best to encourage you not to, because I, like, I picked all of you because I think you're all very talented, and I want you all, I want to publish you all and help get your, make your voices heard. So I wouldn't have done that if I didn't think there was potential there.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But also,
but it's so good to hear other people feel the same way. Yeah, we just don't really talk about it, you know?
Yeah, and then even from my perspective, there's been times where I'm like, maybe I should just be the organizer and I shouldn't put my story in there. And then,
there you go.
So it's, just to let you know, you're not alone. We have, even
that's
me,
good.
The or, you know, who's, whose whole idea was to start the anthology, struggles with that. So, just give
you a little bit. Well, we took a lot on, you especially. Like, this is a huge undertaking and done with very little to just like self-taught knowledge about all of this. So, you know, I'm saying this to myself as much as I'm saying it to you and to all of our cohort. It's, like, this is a big deal for a lot of us. So just have to hopefully it gets done in exactly the way and manner it needs to be done in. And then we can all say, like, we did this. And
yeah,
it's pretty cool when you think about it like that. Like, you know, is it 16 of us, 15 of us?
So we did have one that did drop out. So I think we're down to 15. They just had some personal stuff going on and they had to, they had to remove themselves for now. But yeah, I think we're at 15 right now. I got to double check.
That's so exciting though.
Because
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's exciting. I have a lot of really cool stuff planned for the launch. It's just, they can't happen till launch. So
sure. Of course.
But lots of really cool stuff that I think TikTok will love. I think that, all the authors will love, and, just super excited about it. And super excited to be able to share all of these wonderful creative voices with the world. Cause that was the whole purpose of starting the anthology, is just seeing all of these talented writers on BookTok that I wanted to do some sort of, we're getting the TikTok alarm.
TikTok timer.
But yeah, just do some sort of collective like boost to these voices that I think have a lot of creative potential. So.
I love it.
All right. Well, speaking of writing, or moving on to our next writing topic. Sorry, I am so brain dead.
Speaking of writing.
Of writing. That's the whole podcast. Moving on to our next writing topic. I wanted to touch on this one because you and I have both recently, I think, taken a vacation, at least from the podcast. So, you know, we've talked about before, it can be really tempting to think that you need to always be productive, especially if you're looking at people on TikTok. But I just know in my own personal life too, like, I'm very harsh on myself. If I'm not doing something productive at all times. And so I think kind of just having this recent vacation just reminded me the importance of taking breaks from things, whether that's taking a break from writing, taking a break from work, from just my normal daily routine sometimes. So I just wanted to know if you have any, sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here. I wanted to know what are some things you like to do to kind of unwind and take those breaks? And do you have any advice for other writers specifically who may be struggling with that?
I think I touched on this briefly, but yes, Paula, the therapist, said to change your perspective, whether that be physical perspective or reading a book by an author that is not your normal, taking yourself out of your comfort zone, something I do not like to do. I'm a creature of habit and comfort. Same. I am akin to a hobbit in that regard. As long as I have beer and food to eat, I don't have to do anything. I think I actually have the exact problem with you, I think, a little bit, in that, like, if I'm not productive, I don't care. Mm-hmm. However, that leads to laziness, which I'm not a huge fan of. So I'm a little bit more, just think of me as like a little hobbit gremlin where I'm like, if I don't have to do anything, I'm not going to do anything. But in knowing that about myself, that it can be negative, it is about working with the workflow that works best for you, as I am learning. Because TikTok and because other authors, both famous and not famous, have told you to do it this way or that way, or here's the best way to work, or here's where you should be working, or wake up at 5, don't work until you're after, whatever. Like all these different forms of advice, you try and fit yourself and mold yourself into. And that in of itself can be very demoralizing and lead to paralysis. So my biggest advice to anyone, including people like myself, is that, like, be an acknowledgement of when you work best and what happened or needed to happen in order to get you there. So for me, that's making sure the house is clean and that the groceries are in the fridge and that the dog has been taken care of and it's a Saturday morning and I've got my coffee and it's a cloudy day. Like, all of these things have to kind of compound for me to feel like, yes, this is when I am most productive. And then you learn from that, right? You're like, okay, well, it's obviously not a cloudy day, but have I done all these other things? Do I feel like I am ready? I know that seems kind of weird and convoluted, but really this year has been teaching me work with yourself, not against yourself. Don't try and fit yourself into the mold of what other people do or have done to be productive. And in doing that, vacations are super important. Just disconnecting from your phone if you can. My partner and I were just in Germany and Austria, and we agreed that even between now and our next big trip, we need to take longer weekend trips places just to get out of Dodge and just to sit and journal. Even if you just go to a coffee shop you've never been to before and try that and just sit and be present, I think is just, they're great reminders that life isn't just work. I also need silence to myself, that I reset with friends. So lots of little things here and there, but I hope my advice was clear, even though I rambled a bit.
those are all great points. I don't really have a lot to add because you kind of touched on most of what I do as well. Like, especially with the making sure everything is kind of in order for you to be productive. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm also of the same mind where, like, everything needs to be clean before I even think about being productive. Like, the house needs to be spotless as much as I can get it to that. I'm very like OCD about that. I cannot do anything until I'm in a clean environment. And then other more pressing responsibilities need to be handled too. Like, is my dog? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now that I have a dog, is my dog taken care of? Is she all set for like the next hour? Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And then, things like that. Like, as long as I don't have other stuff lingering in the back of my mind, I can usually be a little more flexible about things. But when those things are there, it's impossible for me to be productive. So I think those are all great points about making sure you're kind of mindful about what leads to you being more productive. Because that's also not true for everybody. Like, some people can write or get work done in a messy environment. And I wish I could do that. But if you thrive in a different type of environment, make note of that and kind of use that to your advantage. Like, okay, the house doesn't need to be spotless for you to be productive. So maybe you don't need to clean right away. Or something like that. Just, you know, think about what works best for you and use that to your advantage as much as you can. And also take a break once in a while.
Yeah, definitely.
I definitely needed that recent vacation, especially with how work has been going. If you're just struggling, like, even in like a good environment for productivity, maybe you just need like a short break. And that doesn't mean taking a week off. It could mean, like Ash said, you know, just kind of disconnecting and going to a nice place that you haven't checked out in a while or something like that.
Yeah,
like
For
just
sure.
give yourself time away, because that's almost always a cure for like the paralysis around being productive. So
yeah, 100%. Bye, Nicole. It was good to see you. Nicole is
thank you, Nicole, for joining.
Number one fan. Number one girl.
Yeah, we love you, Nicole. Thank you so much for joining and hope you have a great night.
See ya. Yeah.
Well, we only have... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
Well, I was going to jump to our next topic, but I think you were continuing. Nope. You sure?
Nope. Yep.
Okay.
Go for it. I just looked at the time. I was like, oh, no, we should move on.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, we got one more hot button issue. This I noticed on all of my social media platforms, strangely enough. Like, usually it's isolated to one, but this was on Threads and TikTok, and I think maybe Bookstagram. I'm not entirely sure, because there's not a lot of like text exchanges on there, so it was probably Threads and TikTok. But I wanted to touch on this interesting strategy for reading books, which is actually not reading them. So
correct.
Some people on social media have shared that the way they read books is by skipping paragraphs for various reasons. It could be because there is a, you know, there's exposition and they don't think it's important. There's a boring world building, or just it has some type of content they don't want to read. Personally, I do not understand this mindset, and I have compared it to skipping scenes in movies or skipping parts of a song. Like, if you're watching a movie and there's like a really boring scene, do you fast forward? Because I don't do that. So this is the same thing to me. Like, I couldn't skip a bunch of paragraphs in a book and then claim that I still read it. There's times where I'll like speed read through something if it's getting like, if it's really dragging on, sometimes I'll read a little quicker to get through it, but I won't skip it all like outright. I'll still read it. So yeah, what are your thoughts on this interesting approach to reading? And it sounds like you don't partake, but what do you think about
that. I need the GIF. Was it from Game of Thrones where it's like, shame, shame. Like, what? First of all, I want to acknowledge that I also unintentionally will read too fast, and I will find myself kind of skimming a page if I'm excited to get to the next scene.
Yeah,
but I literally catch myself every time. I'm not joking. I'm not trying to be like hyperbolic. I'm like, you're reading too fast. Go back, and I will go back and slow down because I haven't absorbed everything. And I'm not sure if this is like a fantasy reader component of like both of you and I, like our brains just work in a way that I'm like, I will miss important info if I do not read every paragraph. Sure, some of it might be more boring and I might have to take a break and be like, oh, okay, this is too much. Wheel of Time for me is very similar in that regard. Like, it takes me so long to get through those books because there's just like a lot. But in my opinion, it's disrespectful to the author. That person spent so much time honing and crafting this story for you. If you are 50 pages in and you find yourself not giving a crap, then DNF the book. Don't force yourself and skim and miss and skip or whatever. I don't, unless you're a speed reader, you know, unless you're someone who reads really fast, I don't think there's any reason to, unless you're reading a textbook and you're like, I don't really need to know this chapter on biomechanic, whatever. I don't get it. I don't understand. DNF it if you don't like it. But if not, honestly, it is just like, as someone who appreciates crafts too, like someone wrote this. Someone put their heart into it and they wrote it for you. So what are you doing? It's just, I don't understand.
Nope. It is really weird. And some of the examples that I saw were like, well, I don't need to know what the king ate for breakfast on this day. And I'm thinking, from my perspective, like, that's my exact thought. It's like, well, as someone who's writing like a murder mystery, that's probably, I actually probably put that in there for you to like pick up on, to maybe know like a line, who was where at what time. So just because it doesn't seem important in the moment doesn't mean it's not going to play a factor later.
I was just blaming as you're talking.
No worries. I was going to say, like, just because it's like maybe smaller pieces of world building or anything doesn't mean it's not contributing to the overall narrative. Like, that world building is important. It's there for a reason. Not to say that some books don't stretch things too long or maybe have filler content, but I still couldn't see myself skipping over that and making that assumption, because I can't come to that conclusion until I've read that anyway. Right. So it's very difficult for me to understand this mindset, unless, like you said, if they really just mean kind of reading fast through a certain section, I can maybe see that. But like you, I also kind of catch myself and will go back. So
yeah,
it's weird. Like if you just outright mean you skip paragraphs, I really don't understand why you're even reading the book in the first place, to be honest. But maybe that is just a fantasy reader thing, like you said. I don't know.
Yeah, I really, truly don't. I don't think any excuse could be clear. Unless it's like a really intense scene that is like triggering for you and you need to skip it. Then I'm like, oh yeah, dude, like you get the gist of the beginning of the scene. You're like, oh, I can't do this. So you kind of like flip through the pages, get to the next. You're like, okay, I kind of understand. That is obviously acceptable. Don't read something that makes you uncomfortable. But if we're just talking general readership, that is bafflingly crazy. Especially as like a writer, I'm crafting these paragraphs to like tell a story. So to think that someone might be skipping all of my hard work, like that is unreal to me. I'm just not a huge fan of anyone who does that. Boo, shame, shame.
Yeah. And I was gonna put that caveat out there that like, I'm not going to, like, don't expect me to accommodate you skipping our, like, whatever paragraph in my writing, because I don't know which ones you're skipping and I don't know why. And
right.
You're just going to have to, if you want the full picture, you got to read the full story. I don't know what's
happening. Now, if it's a book that I have already read and reread a couple times, like my favorite books of all time, of course, I'm going to know what section that I'm like, I already understand what's happening and it's just world building at this point, but I already know it. So, of course, I'm just going to skip to when they start talking again. Like, that is different. And if that's what you are talking about, understandable. Because I'm like, I remember reading a Garth Nix book, and I'm like, the first quarter of it, I remembered everything. But then, I'm more than halfway through, and I'm like, I forgot all of this stuff. But even then, I just don't, I don't know. Just bad things in life.
Right. Well, Ash, that covers all our controversial reading, publishing, writing, book-related topics.
Lots of good questions.
We picked a lot of good ones to come back with. Yeah. I think we did a good job. Yeah. And then we should be bringing on guests soon, so we'll have even more exciting, a little bit different format probably for you guys. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that throws some excitement into the mix for all our viewers. But before we wrap up, we always have our writing resource. I'm trying to omit the word weekly from these things now. and it looks like you have a pretty cool one. So I'm going to go ahead and let you share yours first, and then I will share my kind of cheap writing source for the week. But
it's not cheating. I think it is a great thing. And when I saw it, I was like, that's perfect. No. Mine is actually not really a resource this week. It's more of like, it's essentially a nonprofit called More Than Words. And it's an online and in-person bookstore where kids 16 to 24 who are in foster care, are homeless, out of school, or in the court system learn to run an online and retail bookstore. And they also get community support, oftentimes like 2 years after they've completed the program. So this like helps them tackle barriers to entry to work, and also just gets them involved in the community in a really safe and obviously beneficial place. So it is an online bookstore. I would suggest in this banned book week, National Banned Book Week, if you're interested in buying a book, please check them out first. 100% of the proceeds of every book purchase goes back into the program to help support these kids and young adults. So I found it was a really good, I found them on TikTok, actually. They're on Instagram and on TikTok. Give them a follow. I felt really compelled by the TikTok videos, and I was like so stoked to see that there's like a place that is connecting young adults with books in a way that also helps them. So yeah, More Than Words is the website.
That's very cool. I haven't heard of them before, but no, I think this is also like, as we kind of run out of writing resources to share, I think this is a good space to share just like book related community resources like this as well. I think that's that's a great idea.
That's, and what I was thinking.
This sounds like a really awesome organization, so I will definitely be checking them out shortly after this to see if there's any banned books I need to buy and add them to my banned bookshelf.
Yep, exactly.
Mine is not as cool as Ash's. I kind of went the cheap route a little bit this week, but I did do it for a good reason, because I really want to reiterate that our guest appearances are now open. So if you are an indie author, my resource for you this week is the Quill Inquiry podcast. You can now submit an application to be a guest on our show. Like I said, we have some factors that go into consideration of who we can bring on, just because we don't record every single week multiple times, so we just have limited space. But we give everybody a fair shot, and we would love to see you on our show if the stars align. And that is going to be my resource for the week. So hopefully that we can help some of you guys with marketing a new release or maybe a past release. We'd just love to talk with authors from all backgrounds on here. So that's going to be my resource for the week.
It's a good one. It's great. I don't see what you're saying. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's actually pretty good. Well, I think most of our guests may have left. We may have one person in the chat, so I'll just give a few seconds if anyone has any questions or suggestions or feedback for this episode or the next. Now is the time to share it as Ash and I get ready to sign off for the night. Ash, while we're keeping an eye on chat, do you have any closing thoughts you'd like to share with anybody today, or do you think we touched on everything?
I think we did a good job. I think we did a good job. I think we were back on the horse. This has actually given me it's given me a good jump of adrenaline. Next time we are on this podcast, we will both have our short stories beta reading and out in the world. So that's exciting too.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of exciting. But yeah, that's it. We just got to keep trucking.
Yep. I feel like we say that every week, but it's just...
it's our motto at this point. Just keep trucking.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Excuse me. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining. It's nice to be back. Nice to see all of the familiar faces pop in the chat. Even if you didn't leave a comment, it's just nice to see you show up. So thank you so much for your support, for the likes and the comments. And we will see you guys, I think October 8th is our next episode, but you'll know on socials. We'll keep you updated. So maybe there will be a third person on here with us. We'll see. So
hopefully, fingers crossed. Thanks, Brandon. As always, excellent questions, and I'm really stoked for the next couple weeks.
Thanks, as always, Ash, and can't wait to see you on the next episode. Maybe we'll have some good short stories to share with people. So
I think we will.
All right. See you, Ash.
Bye. See you guys.